Welcome back to Dating Games, a Modern Relationships podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and our guest this week is a fixture of the Irish comedy scene. So joining me from just down the road, it's Danny O'Brien.
Hey, Bobby, how are you?
I'm grand. It's good to catch up with you. I've seen you quite a few times in the recent days.
I know. I met you for the first time, and then by coincidence, the next two nights afterwards, I've actually seen you more than any of my friends this year in the most amount of time.
Well, that's good. Well, hopefully I fooled you into thinking I'm also everywhere in the Irish comedy scene. And today we're talking about relationships. Do you have any first thoughts, like off the top of your head, where you're at, where you think the world is at in this like weird post-pandemic time?
I definitely think relationships have changed quite dramatically. My friend of mine is actually a relationship counsellor. We were talking a little bit about it in general. He said like a lot of people are struggling coming out of the pandemic, and I think things change a lot for a lot of people, and quite a lot of breakups, I think, after the last 18 plus months. And I was quite grateful that I wasn't in a long-term relationship, if I'm totally honest, during the pandemic. I feel quite lucky.
Yeah, I remember I was living with a flatmate who was actually also my ex, but we were like friends before, during and after as well. And we just were constantly saying to each other, like, thank God I'm living with you, because you think of all the other people you've lived with and how that would have gone. Yeah, and you're right, a wave of breakups. But also what surprised me was there was like another wave of breakups coming out of the restrictions. Like, I think a lot of people buckled down and weathered the storm, and then when they had a bit of freedom, they were like, okay, and now I've had more of this person in my face than I maybe needed for my entire life.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I always ask audience members from the stage who's been together throughout the pandemic, and the ones who cheer, I just go, fair play, because I think you'll be together forever. And then you made it through the second wave that you just mentioned, and you're still together, then I think it's pretty probably safe to say that they're quite happy to be together, you know?
Yeah, no, I think there's something to that, the strengthening effect, and hopefully a good comparison, that you've been through that, and then you get to be back to somewhat more normality.
Yeah, you've gone to war with each other, you know?
And so do you have a dating story ready to kick us off?
I do. And I think the reason I'll tell you this one is because it's back when I met Elena Gabrielle in 2016. So I was doing a show called Best of the Edinburgh Fest, which is when it's a show that's been running for about 25 years by an amazing promoter called Mary Tobin. And she brought myself, an English act and a Scottish act, over. So we were doing a tour in Perth Fringe, Adelaide Fringe, and Melbourne International Comedy Festival in Australia. And I'd been gigging loads, and then I left my kind of job. I always double job for years before I was like a full-time professional comic. And I used to be a youth worker with disadvantaged young people. Then I moved into the homeless and addiction services, in case I wasn't stressed out enough. And then in 2016, I kind of had enough work in the diary. I got offered a tour in Australia. I made the decision that's it. I'm going to go full-time with comedy. I also come out of a relationship that I was in for a couple of years. And it's probably my least favorite relationship ever, if I'm totally honest. And I wasn't in a good place afterwards. And I just, when I got the offer for Australia, I was so delighted. It was just like freedom. And you know what I mean? I was so happy to kind of go to the other side of the world, to have the crack and do loads of shows. And I got on Tinder. I was just so eager to kind of get away from that relationship. And also because I was like free, and you know, you're in a different continent and hemisphere and everything. And I went on Tinder, and after a couple of days of being there, I matched with a girl there. We're chatting away, and she was stunning. And like, I'm always very cautious with anything like that. And you know, from recent things that we've heard, with like recent catfish stories and stuff, I was a bit like, is she real? It seemed too good to be true. I'd be a bit cynical in that respect. And I met this girl in a place called Subiaco, which is about 10 minutes outside of Perth Centre. And she was amazing. Like, she was stunning. Like, she looked better than her profile. I was going, what's going on? Anyway, we went there drinking all night. We had a great time. And then she kind of casually mentioned throughout the night that she'd had epilepsy. And that was fine. And I'd worked with young people who had epilepsy and all this kind of stuff. So the night continued, and her dad owned a few properties, I think, around Perth. And she was like looking after one of them, whatever. The house was amazing. And she's like, do you want to come back to the house? So we went back and we were drinking. She had this really weird party piece where she could sing the alphabet with her mouth shut. Like properly, like super clear, like ventriloquist. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life.
How do you find out you can do that?
I asked her that, and what she told me was when her dad would give out to her and her siblings when they were growing up, she would swear at him with her mouth closed, and she got really good at doing it to the point that he would blame the siblings. Do you know what I mean? That was amazing. So anyway, long story short, we ended up hooking up or whatever, and the next morning, it was incredibly hot, like, especially for an Irishman who just left winter. This was January in Perth, like, one of the hottest places you could be. And woke up the next morning, I was really hungover, I'm dying of sweat. She got up and went to the bathroom. And then when she came back out of the bathroom, she was lying there, and she just looked a bit weird. And I'm like, is everything okay? And she kind of started screaming, like she was in pain into the pillow. And I'm like, I thought she was joking, right? Because she was, like, a bit of a messer. And initially, I genuinely thought she was kind of pretending to have a seizure, kind of to mess with me. And then, like, the pillow started filling up with blood. And I'm going, what's happening? And then I thought she might have overdosed, had gone into the bathroom and had used, or, you know, maybe she was, like, a recovery. I don't know. Like, and I was like, worked with this stuff in social care. I've seen this stuff before. So I tried to put her in the recovery position. Her jaw's, like, clenched. I tried to put my, never do this, by the way, listeners. Her jaw was so clenched, she was choking. I put my hand to try and open her mouth because I thought she was choking. It really bit my hand off. Use a belt if you ever have to do that, by the way, or don't ever do that. Anyway, what was happening was that she was actually having a grand mal seizure, which is, it's French for like big sick. So it's like the biggest, most convulsive exorcist seizure you can have. Anyone who's listening who's ever witnessed one of them will understand, like, it's terrifying. I realized then she was having a seizure. Then it just got worse and worse and worse. And then she actually started going blue, like, she was no oxygen, and she started, like, her lips started going blue. And I'm like, oh my God, she's actually dying. There was a good 10 seconds where I was like, she's dead, like, she's dying. And I was going, I just didn't know what to do. I was trying to ring an ambulance. The number from her, I was down 999 on my Irish phone. I think it cost me about 400 quid in data because I turned on my Irish phone because I hadn't got an Australian phone yet. And the number in Australia isn't 999. Yeah, it's 000. So I had to Google that, the most expensive Google in history. And I rang them and they were like, you know, can you tell us the address? I didn't know the address. I had to like run out onto the street and I was like looking for posts, trying to find what the address was. There's an ambulance coming. And then I went into the room and she started coming out of it. I was like, thank God, I was just so glad she was alive. And then when she's coming out of it, she goes, she was totally like, her brain was fried. And she goes, who are you? And then I'm like, oh my God. And like, because we'd like slept together and everything like before, I was like, oh my God, this is horrific. Like, and then her memory started kicking back in. Luckily, I had like the messages on WhatsApp. I was like, I'll meet you at this bar in Subiaco. So I showed her. And she started like remembering then. I had to kind of like jog her memory, do you know what I mean? And then the ambulance is coming. So I went and got her, I went down to this little cafe and I got her a banana smoothie and a sandwich. And then I came back up and gave them to her and she was okay. The ambulance came, but like she could barely walk or anything. Like I had to help her put her clothes on. It was the equivalent of like someone running 3 marathons. That's what it does to your body. Like it's, so she'd like all her arms, her muscles were all like strained or whatever. Anyway, the ambulance came, checked her over. She basically had forgot to take the latter part of her medication because we were drinking and hadn't had one of these seizures in ages. Anyway, I was like traumatized. I had to do a show that night and my producer's like, how was last night? I was like, you don't even want to know. And my producer's laughing at me going, Jesus Christ, Danny, you're not letting these Tinder anymore on the tour. And I was like, I'm done, no crap. Anyway, she turned up at our weed apartments kind of beside the festival, beside the fringe. And she turned up in the apartment the next day and brought me like a sandwich and a banana smoothie. Just said, I'm so sorry that you had to experience that. And then we're still really good friends now. She's a kid and everything now. And she's married, but we still talk every now and then. But yeah, that was, I really hope nothing worse than that ever happens to me again.
Well, God, I hope not. That has got to be the scariest story I've ever heard in all these episodes. Yeah, but something that would bond you. Something that will connect you to her for life. And also one of the things that in many cases, I'll blame Tinder for a lot of things. I don't think Tinder's to blame for that. And I do wonder if maybe in all the time she mentioned that she has seizures, maybe mentioning what you should do, but thank God you had a bit of training.
My main training was panic, if I'm honest. But it was like, she was obviously embarrassed about it as well. So it's not something that you're going to really advertise. But it was really hectic, really, really hectic.
Wow. Fair play to you going up and doing a show after that. Did you have to acknowledge it on the stage, or were you able to skate around?
Yeah, I thought about it constantly. Like, I was so lucky. I was like, what if she'd have died? Like, you know what I mean? Like, genuinely, I was like...
Well, between that and the breakup, you might have been like, I guess I'm single.
Yeah, I was like, which is worse, like a crap breakup or like someone like nearly dying, like when you're only a few weeks out of it?
Wow. And may I ask you about the breakup? So was it the way that it ended? Was it the relationship that was so toxic?
Yeah, it was pretty toxic, to be honest with you. And I can probably say it's one of the main reasons I haven't been in a scene. I've been in like kind of casual relationships or like seeing people and stuff since then, but I haven't had a proper relationship since then. I was kind of a little bit battle scarred from it, I suppose. And it's just not really, it's not what I want. Not that another one would be like that, but like I spent half my life out of the country, traveling a lot. It makes it really difficult, but that's something that I've accepted. And you have to just go, listen, if this is what you want to do with your life, then that's also part of it as well, you know?
It's a really difficult thing to consider, but fair play to you for thinking about it, right? Because, you know, it can be, whilst the lifestyle of being an internationally touring comic is unusual in the grand scheme of things, for you, that's also what your peers are doing. And so I think sometimes people can get kind of lost in the faux normality of that and then forget how weird that is for someone from the outside dating you.
And like, I don't switch it off. Like, I don't have this will never happen. It's just, I haven't met anyone that it's right. And I'd find it unfair. It's like, or if you're with someone and then you're away for months on end, that's not fair on them either. Do you get what I mean? So I suppose it's about kind of waiting for the balance where it works, because you can't be selfish and be like, okay, well, I'm going to go away on tour for 3 months and expect someone to be okay with that. I never would, you know?
Yeah, that's very honest. And yeah, I can also understand at times where comics do have a difficult time with that, because so often a big part of the appeal, you know, the way that comedians shine on stage, the fascination a lot of people would have in this kind of career can be part of what makes you attractive. And then the reality sets in of you are never there, and you do have to work these really strange hours, and you do have to be out in evenings and not going on dates with your partner. I think, you know, that can still be difficult to have that conversation and be like, oh, but you knew what I did when you started dating me.
Totally. And also, if anyone's listening, I suppose the biggest Instagram versus reality that I can give for the life of a performer is that Instagram is the picture that you see of us on stage doing the show or the crowd or whatever it may be. And the reality is you sitting at the airport waiting for a Ryanair that's been delayed, even though you've just got there 4 hours early because of queues, and then it's been delayed. So you've just spent 8 hours at the airport and you're sitting on the ground trying to do invoices and admin and social media or whatever. Like, that's reality. The gig is only the tiny bit of it, you know. The gig's not the work. The sitting on your arse at the airport or traveling is the work, you know?
Yeah, that part right there, because you can find yourself spending as much time in Dublin Airport as actually on stage. And then you wonder, which one of these is my job?
Yeah, 100%. Travel and admin are 90. I'd say, honestly, travel and admin are 90, and writing are 95% of your life as a performer, and 5% is actually performing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because anyone can look from the outside and be like, wow, you know, to do that, to tour around, to make that money for only an hour, it's never only an hour.
I wish. That's my dream, is to just have that 5% as my life.
Yeah. And so these days, are you taking a break from dating, or are you just sort of like keeping open to it but not particularly pursuing it?
Yeah, that's it. Like, nothing too hectic or serious. Like, and you know, if I meet people or whatever, it is what it is. But because we're kind of coming out of COVID and stuff as well, it's been pretty flat to the mat for everyone, kind of catching back up on 2 years of kind of rescheduled gigs and then all the other stuff. And And I think everyone's kind of just focusing on getting their career back on track, and then, you know, whatever kind of comes later is fine. But it's, if anything has taught us from the, anything from the last 2 years, how volatile the entertainment industry is. So now is not the time to be having the crack and going out like 5-6 nights a week on dates. It's time to work, you know?
Yeah, because that is still hanging over all of us, that it's difficult to even know how to articulate where we are in relation to the pandemic. Like, it can feel quite over here in Ireland, and we're so vaccinated and a lot of things are going well, but that's not the case everywhere. And there is still that threat of, like, what if there's another variant? So, you know, I'm exactly the same. I'm like, let's pack in as much work now.
Yeah, let's make hay while the sun shines for 4 minutes in Ireland per day.
Yes, for sure. I mean, but that's the life, right? That's what we're all doing in general. Because right now it's been like hot the last few days, and everyone is in as little clothes as they can get away with, a few napkins tied together, because we don't know. We don't trust the sun. We don't trust that COVID will stay away. You got to make the most of it. And yet, I feel like of a lot of people, if we were to go into another lockdown, you seem to keep pretty busy the first time.
Yeah.
And one of the things, you had a fake marriage.
Is that right?
It was kind of real. Well, I actually did get married. So in September of 2020, myself and fellow comedian Carl Spain, we were in this weird in-between time, if people can think back, where you were allowed to do some things, you weren't allowed to do another. So you weren't allowed to do live gigs, and then you were, and then it was like limited capacity. But then weddings were allowed to go ahead, but funerals were restricted. Do you remember that bizarre kind of flip-flopping? And around then, you were allowed to do gigs, but only for up to 50 people. But it was looking like they were going to move the goalposts again. So as a precaution, myself and Carl Spain decided, I kind of said it as a joke. I thought about it when I saw weddings are okay. I said, do you want to get married for the crack? Like, because I think it'll be funny. Like, and like, why not? And he said, yeah. Now, he's with his partner, Rachel, for like 17 years now. He had a TV show. That's where he actually met her. It was called Carl Spain Wants a Woman. And they're still together all these years later, but they're not married. And I'm not married. And another comedian called Paul Crowley, who's based down in Cork, he's actually a registered celebrant. He was a truck driver for years and years, and then he became a celebrant, which I thought was amazing. And he's a brilliant comic. So he drove up from Cork. Right, we did a show in the Wild Duck where you were. And while the host was like talking, we ran upstairs, put suits on, came back down. My cousin's a musician, and we got married, and Paul married us on stage. And it was kind of Vegas-esque. It was kind of a little, not as, you know, do you take, it wasn't that quick, but it wasn't far off that. And yeah, it was really funny. And we made a whole video out of it and everything. It's on my Instagram. But that was one of the highlights, I have to say, of those awful couple of years. It was one of the good times where everyone just had a really, really good night and a great laugh. And then I'm really glad we did it now, because we wouldn't be talking about it now if we didn't, you know?
Yeah. And there is something in that, like there was a strange kind of like beautiful strategizing around some of the rules of like the few things that we could do, you would really appreciate. And, you know, we've talked a bit on the show about like people going on like walking dates and like sitting the far end of a bench from each other just in case. And yet, you know, you can look back on it, even though it was relatively recent, and have a bit of nostalgia, because when else were we spending that much time outside in winter trying to go on these coffee dates?
I think one of my favorite memories was about this time of year, 2 years ago. So it was during the summer. And I think it was when the 5K or 2K was in, and I kind of took over my neighbor's dog. So I was walking this dog pretty much every day. And I went up the canal, and it was like electric picnic, right? The canal in Dublin, up around the barge and stuff. I don't know if you remember, it was chaos. And the police were trying to get people. People just had enough. They were just like, you know, we need to live. And the sun was out. And there was three lads upriver from the barge. It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. On an inflatable boat that they got in Lidl, and there's three of them in a dinghy, and the guards were trying to make them come in so they could arrest them to send them home, and they just kept pushing themselves away from the bank, shouting, "We're on international waters." Police couldn't get to them. It was just, oh, it was the most Benny Hill thing I've ever seen. I was absolutely crying, laughing, watching it. It was amazing.
Yeah, I love that. And for international listeners, what you're referencing there, we had a limit on how far we could go from our home. And people were doing all sorts with that. Again, that's where the maths came in. You figured out your whole radius.
They're having like border parties, you know what I mean? Like with like an Eastern Bloc, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I have a relative, I'm not going to say on air who, but she got in a lot of trouble because she's lives in a small town. Everyone knows her. And she was like, look, I'm in my 89th year. I'm not staying at home. And so she was going on little outings in her car every day and getting to know all the local guards.
Yeah, fair play. Like, you know, especially to anyone who's older, like the scaremongering stuff was awful. And I know they didn't know, but like, for anyone who was old, who was living at home, that was such a difficult 2 years. Like, I remember sitting on my granny's driveway in the winter, just sitting on the ground while she was sitting in the hallway with a mask on. And my heart really went out to anyone who lost people during COVID and weren't able to go see them. Or I went to a couple of funerals. One was a good friend. I had to watch it on Zoom. Another one, I had to stand outside. We couldn't go into the church. Literally just had to stand on the road, you know. And you know, that stuff was awful for people. So touch wood, fingers crossed, we're out the other side of it. And, you know, we can kind of get on with our lives. But I certainly won't ever take things like that for granted again, you know?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I had the relative I mentioned, I had a strange respect for her. But the reality was we were all panicking behind the scenes, but there was no telling her. And I quietly respected it, even though like on the surface, I was like, please stay safe.
Yeah, I'd only respect her. If you're at that age, listen, do your thing.
We were talking about the challenges of dating and touring. What about dating other comedians? Has that been a path you've explored?
I avoid that, to be totally honest with you. It's just not a good idea. Like, you know, the cliche of, you know, don't shit where you eat. It's not, I run a couple of clubs and stuff as well. It's just, it's just not something I'm not interested in. Like I have in the past when I started comedy, I hooked up with a few comedians, of course you do, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they're all grand. Like, you know, some of them are still some of my best mates and, you know, that's fine. Like I'm doing this for like, I think nearly 14 years now. Do you know what I mean? Inevitably you'd always hook up with people you work with. Like that's kind of the nature of the beast. But I always kind of avoid it and have done for quite a long time because especially when you book gigs and stuff, I don't like the complication of that. Or, you know, like if you hook up with someone and then they're like, oh, can I have a gig in your club? I don't want to be ever put in that position ever. Just keep those worlds separate, I think is the best option for me, you know?
Yeah, I think that's fair. It seems a high risk, high reward game in my observation, even when it does work out. Like I see some really strong couples in comedy, but then you also see massive breakups. And, you know, even internationally, it's a small industry. Everybody really knows each other, or, you know, you're one person removed. And so, you know, very quickly you can find then all your mates in comedy have to be sides.
I've seen like some high profile kind of breakups of comics that I know. And like one half of them like can't really work again. They just got like slated by the other half and stuff just gets so messy. And, you know, people like airing the dirty laundry of the relationship on like social media, and I'm like, man, that to me is like absolute nightmare situation. And that's one of the reasons, even well before any of that stuff, I just was like, nah, I'm never gonna have a relationship with someone who is involved in my work world, like,
right? No, because everything's heightened, you know, the rant that you might have to a mate you can instead have on stage to an audience that people are going to film it. That clip is going to haunt both of you. And also we've talked about before with some comics that I know, like also it's exacerbated this, like who was the breaker upper or breaker B. And, you know, one of you is kind of allowed to own the narrative more than the other.
Exactly. With all breakups, like this is how I think about them in any respect, whether it's comedy or anything. There's like the truth and there's one person's interpretation of the truth. And then there's the other person's interpretation of the truth of how they see it and how they see it. But there's only one truth. Do you know what I mean? There is only ever one truth. And then I suppose it depends on, you know, the variables and who knows who and whatever. But that's the reality of it. And no two people are ever going to see that same truth the same way. That's how I feel.
Yeah,
and it drifts. It drifts as time goes on. Like I've seen a lot of that where like who broke up with who becomes kind of like lost to the ether, awkwardly, yeah. Often by one person more than the other.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
You know, or the one that did the breaking up maybe might downplay the relationship, and then the one that was broken up with is like, no, it was this many days. These are the days that I banked.
Oh yeah, the classic of it, like, we weren't even going out. They're like, yes, we were. You were on their lease, you know.
You asked me out.
I heard a very funny story. I won't use names, obviously. But there was a comedian a couple of years ago who was kind of in a relationship, as far as I was told, with someone in a certain country. Let's just leave it at that. And they had traveled to a different country where they were kind of starting to see someone else, kind of casually. And then they were also on dating apps and they were kind of hooking up with a few people off that also. And this is around the time when like WhatsApp was like kind of new and stuff. And this person messaged the same three women that he was about to go on stage and, you know, I'll talk to you after, but instead put all three of them in a group together and then turned his phone off and went on stage for an hour. And by the time he got back, like, all his stuff had been like thrown out of the apartment and everything on the steps. And I was like, I don't even know this person, but like, I get like secondhand anxiety and stress even from that story.
Yeah, I nearly went to check my phone then. It makes no damn sense. But yeah, that paranoia and the idea of like, what is so chained to them. And then that's the one time you have to have it turned off.
Yeah.
Ooh, anything could happen. God, you'd be mortified. It's a lot. And so we'll start to wrap up with our rules of the game. Do you have one in mind? Something you'd recommend trying to live by in dating or relationships?
I heard a wonderful bit of advice from a couple of friends. I have a brother and sister and I hadn't seen them for a long, long time. They come to my shows every year and I actually had lunch with them yesterday in Greystones, and they're fascinating people. One works in psychotherapy, the other one's like an incredible artist, and they were talking about growing up and that their parents never really fought growing up, which is kind of unheard of, particularly like, you know, back in the like 40s and 50s when their parents would have been together. And their parents just sounded like really cool people, to be honest with you. And, you know, that's why I think they're so cool as a result. But they said that their parents never fought really growing up. And I was kind of blown away by this. And any Irish listeners in particular, you're like, what? Their parents never fought? That's never existed. But what they said was, whoever had started the argument, if the parents had an argument, whoever started the argument, the other one would have to apologize. And then they would have to take turns alternating apologizing. So then what would happen is if another argument started over something, they'd go, I apologized last time. And then they'd be trying to remember who apologized the last time. And in that moment, it would then make people go, this is kind of ridiculous, because the time going to take makes them step away from the actual initial argument and it would completely diffuse the situation. So they then said it got to a point that their parents never really fought. They just would kind of talk it out. And I think it's absolutely incredible advice. I really hope that I could do that in the future and be that calm and collected. But I just thought that was a really, really cool life tip.
I love that so much. And it sort of says to me, it's like they kind of got the arguing out of their system. Like they were still bringing up the thing, but I've got this vision of them instead arguing about who apologized last and being like, no, it was definitely me. Like they're trying to steal like which one of them should apologize.
And then in that
moment you realize like, oh, I want to apologize because I love you. And that's a really lovely way of getting through it. Whereas normally I'd be a bit wary of couples that never argue, but it seems like they push through it. They found the other side to still bring things up, but not let it get shouty and escalate.
Yeah. And like quite the opposite of, well, like I friends of mine growing up, I remember my friend saying to me once, I asked him something about his parents and he dead serious said to me, Danny, my parents haven't spoke to each other in 10 years. And to the point of like, they'd be having family dinners and he would like, can you tell your mother to pass the salt? And I was like,
what?
Yeah, and that's a lot more common in Ireland. That level of that atmosphere of toxicity and passive aggression like, the thoughts of living in an environment like that, to me, I'd rather go to prison than being in that kind of relationship. But
I think, unfortunately, part of it is the hangover of, like, it's not that long ago that divorce was just so unheard of here.
And even it takes 4 years, even now. Like, it still takes 4 years.
Oh, yeah. I did an episode recently on divorce. And the professional in the industry, but based in New York, could not believe what it's like here trying to get one. The things you have to prove. You know, and I think that is a hangover. And even when people did get divorced, everyone would know. Like, it wouldn't even necessarily be acknowledged, but everyone would know, like, who in your building.
It was like shame, you know, it was awful.
Yeah. So, I, you know, unfortunately, I think that is where a lot of that hangs over from, because as an outsider to that family, of course, you'd be like, why are they still together? If they don't want to talk, one of them should leave.
That's how I would feel. And as difficult as it can be, and I do sympathize that people have kids and mortgages, there's no amount of, like, household items or whatever that I think is worth staying for, because I think that, like, kind of relationship is so toxic. I do, it may be difficult for a while, but ultimately the relationship with the children will be better, the individual relationships will be better, you know. It will be hard, but that hard bit for me would massively surpass living a lifetime of misery, you know. Yeah, I don't know. And also, like, I think with a lot of Irish guys as well, myself included, like, we can be a little bit emotionally crippled, and it's taken me to my, like, 30s to be able to kind of talk openly about anything, whether it's, like, mental health. Like, I used to get really bad panic attacks when I was about 23, and there was no chat around anything like that then, and I never talked about anything. I just internalized it all and had, like, a horrible couple of years. I think a lot of Irish guys as well, like, really struggle with saying how they're feeling, or, you know, if they're not feeling good or whatever. But I think a lot of them kind of want a mammy. This, like, mammy character who'll kind of look after them, and, you know, that's not okay either, lads. Like, wrap that on the head. Yeah, you left your mammy's house. You don't need to be with someone with a mammy. You need to be with someone because you like them, you care about them, you respect them, and they make your life better. You don't need, like, mammy 2.0 who's going to do everything for you. Like, that's not a relationship. It's absolute bullshit.
Yeah, I totally agree, and you're so right. And I think it's all part of the same cycle. Like, I
a lot closer to my dad, like, these days, but even still, like, we can't speak on the phone for more than 10 minutes before it gets handed off to my mom, because like, he just, like, that's enough emotion for him, and then he wants to, like, go back to the paper. And it's all part of the same thing, right? Because then you're like, okay, but she was always the one I could open up with, so yeah, you look for that rather than finding, like, you know, your male peers or other people you can talk to, because there can be that binary
espresso of emotion. He just has an espresso of it, and that's him done for the day.
I wish I was exaggerating.
And I'm going to break the format a bit, because I have to choose a rule of the game every week. This week I haven't thought of one yet, so instead I'm going to give you an observation of the game, because I have no interest in enforcing this, but it is something I notice, which is, you know, when people, let's say, like, you're chatting to somebody, an additional person comes over, for example, the difference between them saying, that's my girlfriend, versus I'm their boyfriend, for example,
yeah.
I've noticed there's a bit of prediction there on, like, potential misogyny.
100%. That's I get this all the time from the stage, where more so in the UK, if I'm honest. In London, I remember doing a club one night, and the guy was all tattooed up. And if their partner laughs at you as a comic, the guys would get insecure and would literally put their arm around them and pull them in. And I'm like, I'm not going to steal your partner with my jokes about a Tinder date in Australia nearly dying. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's not a good advert. Yeah.
I never understand it. Like, and or guys will, like, I've had guys, like, try to start fights with me after the show because their girlfriend's going, oh, that was really funny. And they get this, like, rage of insecurity. And I'm like, man, like, A, this relationship isn't going to last if you're like this over something like this. And B, go get some therapy. Like, sort your insecurity out. Like, you're at a show. You bought tickets to a show.
You're here to laugh. This is something I never understand. When people turn up in that kind of mood to a comedy show, this is not the place for you. Why are you here?
Go home. Go to the cinema or something.
Yeah.
Go to maybe that'd be worse. Because it'd be like Ryan Gosling or something on the screen. They'd have an absolute meltdown.
they try and punch a projector, but it's just a wall.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh dear. But yeah, no, it's I'm glad that you noticed that too, because it's one of those things, like, I'm not saying that anyone should phrase it a particular way, but sometimes it can be a bit of an indicator of that's my wife, for example.
How they say it as well. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, there's a big difference between, oh, that's my wife, or that's my wife. You know, it's all about tone and inflection and stuff.
Yeah. And it kind of got me thinking about, like, which one I am. And I think when I think about relationships, I think about, like, wanting to be somebody's partner. Mm. So I wonder if maybe you, like, it's even how you frame it in your head outside of a relationship. Do you want to be more somebody's or somebody be yours, even if that's an outdated notion?
I always say someone's name. I don't think I've ever in my life ever used, like, girlfriend, or I'd always just go, this is, oh, hey, this is, like, because I think people should be able to work that out. Like, and if they don't, that's okay. But I if it was my sister, I'd say it's my sister. But if not, I would just say their name. You get what I mean? Like, I've never gone out with my sister, just to be clear. But that's the only reason I'd say that. I always go, this is my sister.
No, no, no.
I don't think we're together.
I can relate that.
Me and my sister do not look at all alike. And so people would assume when we were younger, that they'd assume we were dating sooner than us.
20 years older as well. So, like, it could easily, you know what I mean?
It's a whole trauma. And so on that note, we will wrap up there. If people want to find your work, find your tour dates, you've got a website?
I do. It's just DannyO'BrienComedy.com. But all my upcoming shows, festivals, live shows are all on my Instagram and my Linktree. So just go to DOB Comedy, hit the Linktree, and everything is there.
Grand. And I'm also going to plug, you're over at the Edinburgh Festival in August doing your latest show, which is called...
So yeah, The God of All Things Bad will be from the 5th to the 29th of August. And I'm doing my fringe run with Scottish Comedy Festival this year, which is in the Grass Market. So I'm really, really lucky to be with them and very excited for the fringe. So it's been 2 years. So very excited to be going back to Edinburgh.
Yes, so keen to get back to it. I go to it every year. And actually, this show, the season ends at the end of July, season 2. But I'm going to put something together on my website of a list of all the comics that have been on the show that are at the festival. And so if you're a listener that thinks you're going to be there, go along. Maybe I'll be in the audience. We can say hi. Cool. For now, thank you.
Thanks, Mil.
Thanks for listening.
You can support the show, get ad-free episodes and bonus content by joining our new subscription on Apple Podcasts.
This replaces our Patreon and it's slightly cheaper.
Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta,
with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet.
Speak to you next Friday. Until then, good luck out there.